Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy, and Curse Code and Crown, as well as 3 event podcasts with mini-series releases scheduled at random intervals: Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's D-U-M-B. D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back to Curse, Code, and Crown, a live play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast featuring a fully original world and campaign. I am the wizard Cronox, Observer of Time. Curse, Code, and Crown features our regular voiceover artists and improvisers, Laura Elizabeth as the Orc Countant Eta and Princess Gwendolyn, Tyler Hewitt as Maka Deathcap, and Ryan LaPlante as Duncan Kindano, alongside our Dungeon Master, the incredible Tom McGee. So get ready for an adventure including thrills, chills, and hope for a brighter tomorrow. It's time for Curse, Code, and Crown!
Maka, you are examining the pile of bodies that have been stacked in the name of Jossie by the Jossians, the cult that has sprung up in your absence around the god of death, seemingly with you as some kind of absentee figurehead. The bodies have been known by the faithful as the Unrotted and the Children of Jossie. Though you've seen the effects certainly of the curse on the living, this is your first chance to truly examine its effects on the dead. So what are you looking for? How do you want to approach this investigation? Talk me through what's going on.
I think he would see if he could magically decompose these bodies, like accelerate the decomposition process and see what effect his spores have on a body that has been sick.
Okay. guess that's probably a nature check or an arcana check.
I could roll nature.
I don't really feel like it's medicine since you're using your sort of spore magic to accelerate.
Yeah, and he's also operating under the assumption that medicine is kind of a non-starter, given that there are like physicians in Blaine and stuff like that. Yeah. 9.
You reach out and you can feel your spores beginning to interact with these. But as you watch, and I mean, when I say watch, perhaps observe is the better term, because I feel as though it's not just a purely visual, like I'm staring at it, what's it doing? It's kind of understanding and feeling through the cluster what's occurring. As your spores fall to one of the bodies, they fall across it in a thin sheet, as they do, and kind of line the body. You can see the small fungal growths. Unfortunately, as your spores begin to make contact, you can see them, you know, the faintest hints of decomposition beginning, but then the spores themselves turn sort of a brownish gray to match the other mushrooms on the body. And as you watch over kind of a few minutes, they slowly begin to form the same sort of mushrooms that you're seeing growing elsewhere.
If I pluck one of these mushrooms and examine it, can I tell what kind it is? Have I seen this kind of fungus before?
It almost looks like a color swapped, like color palette swapped growth that you would have. Like it does definitely seem, I mean, from a glance and understanding what you do about medicine, this looks like a mutated strain of spore. It's recognizable, but just slightly different, slightly off. And observing kind of how these spores infected the ones you released, it's clear that this is some form of mutation that is unlike the Necrotis, which felt very much removed from the cluster. This is very much a part of the cluster, but an inverted form of it, or a poisoned form is perhaps the better term.
Then sort of like, okay, so stepping back from like the physical aspect, can I feel it like spiritually through the cluster?
Roll me, I think, do you have religion? Is religion a skill on your, or have we've been using nature for you?
Religion is on there. It's the same modifier as nature.
Okay, so this is just you're reaching out to the cluster role. So whatever you've been using for that, if you could use the same, please.
Okay. It's a 19.
Okay.
I'm gonna call it religion.
As you kind of reach out with your spores and kind of commune with the cluster, these do feel very much like your spores and the spores that you interact with and the cluster. But you do feel that same disorientation that you felt when you first reached out with the cluster upon your arrival, almost as though something is pushing back a little bit against them. And you do sense something that could be construed as rage. There's an urgency and a vehemence to the feeling you get from these spores. Unfortunately, they do seem very much to be a part of the cluster, if a mutated part.
Okay. There is something pushing back. And there's no way for me to kind of chase that feeling or chase that sensation further, is there?
Yeah, I'll let you go a bit deeper. Let's call this you rolled a 19, which is a very good roll. So I want to kind of respect that. Let's call this a wisdom save.
Sure.
As you kind of take the nesty plunge and just fall backward into the spore network.
Okay. Wisdom save. That's pretty good. So let's see. That's a 19 on the die plus 8 to save. So. Ooh. 27 save.
Great. So no damage for you, which is really what we were checking for. You drift deeper into the cluster and allow your sort of sense of self to dissipate slightly, to be less focused on the form of Maka Deathcap and more focused on your place in the cycle. Incidentally, this is a technique and a way of being that has become easier since merging with the root folk archivist, because they kind of, that was their whole deal. So it's a bit easier for you to fall into this now. What you begin to feel is that the cluster itself is rebelling. In a way that now that you're further down, you can feel there's no sort of vicious intent. There's no sort of vengeance on this, it feels more like desperation. It feels more like an animal that's been wounded and cornered, lashing out kind of as best it can to maintain its survival. As you begin to integrate further, you feel how damaged the cluster is in the greater, at least in this area. It's not healthy. It would seem that the manifestation outwardly has been sickness amongst the turtles and everything else, but the cluster itself actually seems to be afflicted by something. And as you kind of explore that feeling, you hear just kind of a faint whisper of the voice that you remember meeting in the darkness deep below the swamp. Just the faintest hint of Jossie echoing throughout the cluster. The voice seems to be moaning in pain.
Mm. So, okay. So this pushing back, this rage below that appears to be suffering.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And as you kind of feel that, suddenly it's almost as though you can feel the eyes of, not that Jossie has eyes, but the eyes of Jossie upon you. And suddenly it's almost as though all of the spores pulse. You feel yourself violently ejected from the network. And it does hurt. You rolled high, so you're not going to take any damage from it. But it's like you walked in on Jossie wounded kind of in a corner. And as soon as you were noticed, Jossie grabbed you and threw you the fuck out of her domain. If you were not so in tune with the cluster and if you didn't have your own sort of non-infected spores, non-mutated spores, this would likely have almost killed you. And definitely feels wrathful, definitely feels full of vengeance and rage, but you have a better understanding of kind of where that's actually rooted.
Okay. Then I think the next step is to see if putting these bodies to the torch, if they burn up.
Mm-hmm. The fire refuses to catch just from immediately putting the torch to them. It seems as though the spores that have infested them are muting the effects. It's not to say that, you know, it's not having any effect, like they're not fireproof. If you do want to try and torch the bodies, you'll need an accelerant of some sort. I will say, though, that is easy enough to get if you want to pursue that course of action, but they are resistant to your efforts.
Before pursuing the accelerant route, I do have Flaming Sphere prepared. I want to try casting that as just like larger magical fire.
Yeah.
And then to just kind of see if I can just cast it around the...
Yes. Reaching into kind of your magical abilities, you summon the sphere and you slowly roll it in a crescent moon arc around your home. The bodies ignite as you do so, and you hear kind of a crackling and smell the kind of the purity that comes with ash to you as a means of, when all else fails, putting a body to rest. As it rolls around, there is an undulation through the cluster as whatever Glomera was trapped on these bodies is released back into the cycle. The pain of Jossie doesn't seem to stop. The rage doesn't seem to dissipate, but you do feel a shift as this occurs. Almost like the dumb example I can think of off the top of my head is like, it's like it, almost as though if something were caught in its teeth, that is free. So there's like a moment of relief, but not anything.
It's like grand. I'm treating a symptom, right?
100%. It's like a brief rest. It's like putting a cold cloth across your head when you have a migraine. Like it helps a little bit. It's not going to solve it, but it's a salve.
Okay.
So as the flames rise in ironically a crescent moon of Jossie around your hut, Duncan and Gwendolyn return with the remaining cultists. Backlit, stepping forward from your hut as the unrotted children of Jossie burn to ash around you. You have a chance to address the remaining cultists and to try and put this blasphemy to rest. What do you say?
Maka will raise his hands, I think, with just like unintentionally looking quite dramatic with like the blaze behind him.
Yep.
And say, I am Maka Deathcap, gravekeeper of the people of Bleen, and the true servant of Jossie. The ones who led you here, the ones who fed you lies about killing the sick to cure yourselves, they are dead, killed by my hand, and those of my companions.
And I gesture to Gwendolyn and Duncan. And I say,
you were misguided. Jossie is the god of death. Something entirely unavoidable. You do her a service by dying when it is time, when your life is taken naturally through sickness, age. If you are indeed a warrior, then at times, yes, through combat, but not like this, not slaughtering the sick. I do not want to hear of the Jossians ever again, or I will return and do Jossie's true work.
Dum-Dums and Dice would like to welcome you to the grim darkness of the 41st millennium. I am Inquisitor Caveat Ventus, Keeper of the Inquisition's Black Library, and I'm releasing my report on the Valentine Heresy. It's an actual play podcast set in the Genesis adaptation of Warhammer 40,000's Dark Heresy RPG. Join Ryan LaPlante as Inquisitor Lucius Valentine, and Laura Elizabeth and Tyler Hewitt as hive-bred siblings Lyric and Alto, as this unlikely trio try to save the Emperor from a cabal of mysterious enemies in a series created by Games Master Tom McGee. Can these unlikely heroes survive in a galaxy where there is only war? Find out in the first episode of Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy. Available now.
I told your vine marrow, your pontifex, that Jossie is beyond wrath. And I am Jossie's wrath in her place on this physical realm. I do not want to have to come back here like this.
And I gesture to the pyre behind me.
Would you maneuver the flaming sphere into your hut, or do you preserve the hut?
Which is covered in writings to evil Jossie.
Yeah, you know what? It hadn't occurred to Maka, but I think if he's gesturing and he looks over his shoulder and he sees that the hut is kind of like a weird, like, symbol.
Yeah, it's become the temple
of people have projected
the Jossians.
False value towards it. He'll just like, this is meaningless. This is nothing. This is material. And yeah, he'll just bowl that ball like right through it,
right,
and burn it up.
So as you turn back to them, the ball of fire just kind of like consumes the huts, yeah, and the leaflets burn up. Again, Mach is not intending to look dramatic, but it looks fucking dramatic as hell as the writings of Peak and the other zealots sort of catch light and drift off of the sides of the hut, kind of burning up in the air as you face them. Slowly and kind of with reverence and fear, they begin to kind of melt away into the night. rapidly kind of rubbing the symbols of Jossie off them and walking away somewhat dazed, as, you know, brainwashed cultists are like to do when they realize that what they were worshiping is not a thing. Yeah. And with that, the cult of the Jossians was put to rest. Returning to Wajdi Vine Marrow, he is thrilled to hear that you were able to end the cult's machinations. You get that sinking feeling that he's mostly happy because this will mean that people are like working harder in his shitty warehouses, but in his deployment centers. But nevertheless, he does grin rather broadly and extend a hand to you, Maka. Actually, I think we established props is the way the turtles do things. So he extends a fist for a fist bump and just says, "Of course, we will let justice run its course, but I think justice will smile upon you, Maka Deathcap. You have brought great productivity back to Bleen."
I think Maka, you know, dispensing with any and all subtlety, is just like, we'll say,
"In performing this service for you, you will find me not guilty of the charges."
Yes, and he looks to Duncan again, just with kind of the subtlety thing being a concern, and he kind of nods at you in like a, "You get it, right?"
Yeah, Duncan just gives him that very knowing, like, gym take of just like, "This is Michael Scott saying the wrong thing in an important meeting, but don't worry about this, David Wallace."
And he turns back and just says, "Yes, that is what I will do."
Yeah, and then Mark is like, "Yes, good." And then he'll props.
Great. with that, you have obtained the favor of one of the three jurors you require. Meanwhile, back in jail, Ida, you've been looking over the paperwork, and unfortunately, you feel like you have like one third of the puzzle right now. Because unfortunately, you've received a lot of paperwork about the conspiracy in Sprongbrek, but you don't have the full records of the people who were talking to the Sprongbrek folk. So, like, it'd be very like, now you could, you know, you can absolutely take the Sprongbrek people down, but they're already down. so you've reached a bit of an impasse. My question to you is, earlier you'd mentioned wanting to go to the library, and as we've established, the Consortium of Bleen, being designed by future criminals for present criminals, the jails are very nice. So they're very happy to bring you documents from the library that you would desire. What, knowing that you've hit a dead end on the conspiracy and there's likely not anything they can bring you from a library that would just be like, "Here's the book of conspiracies," what would Ida want to be learning and exploring about the Consortium of Bleen while she's imprisoned?
Well, I think what she'd be looking for is, because I doubt like this conspiracy is like, you know, public knowledge and that it would be public record. But that just wondering if there might be kind of slight hints in like their news articles, like basically like, "Oh, these people came through," and like basically a superficial reporting of who from the Empire of Numbers is like coming here. Were there any weird like trade negotiations? Basically, does anything in the news like tell me that there is something more to the stories?
So she wants like the fantasy equivalent of those microfiche things.
100%.
Look at the newspapers. Exactly. I want a montage of like scrolling through at like super fast speed. And
The main problem is you don't have someone with you to be like, "Hey, come take a look at this," to indicate that you found something and end the montage.
Right.
Okay, so they don't have microfiche, nor do they have like mass records of like, they can't bring you like archival newspaper stuff. They bring you like sort of I think probably The best they can offer you, based on the kind of place they are, there is sort of a trade periodical that is widely available. Mm. So they bring you that. They also, because you've got Murdoch on your side pulling strings, they bring you some of the more recent, like, sort of morning announcements that would be read out at the deployment centers, mm-hmm. just to kind of bring all the employees up to speed. Can you roll me an investigation check, please?
Sure. Okay. That's a 19.
Okay. So you can, they're heavily trade focused, obviously, like they're very much an industry paper. Not because you're great at sussing out conspiracies, but because you are great at sussing out the most like logical way to present information. You can see there are a lot of gaps in this, and that the reporting is being purposefully vague, mm-hmm. which of course is like nails on a chalkboard to you. Like purposefully obscure stuff is a huge frustration. There's no direct reference to anything having gone wrong. Mm-hmm. There is a very, very, very strong sense of everything is fine. Like in, you know, modern meme terms, it's very much the dog in the room on fire with a coffee cup saying this is fine. In that there's a lot of talk of like, well, as you know, like trade negotiations have not been going well for us lately with this group. However, we are confident that we will still make our targets. And remember, 2 years ago was a record year for us. You know, we're really killing it, doing it on all fronts. So as long as we stay positive and just keep making sure we're making our deployment targets, we'll be fine. The Empire of Numbers is referenced a lot, but in passing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of in lists, but not... There's nothing specific to it, which seems to track with their surprise that you arrived. And though you were unaware of it when you were in the Empire, some suggestion that the relationship between the Empire of Numbers and the Consortium of Bleen has fallen off. You would know, Ida, just from being an orc accountant and living and growing up in the Empire, that for a long time, one of the prime alliances in Gren was between the Consortium of Bleen, the Apex Institute, and I believe there's one other. Sorry, I just need to refer to my notes because it's mm-hmm. been a hot second since mm-hmm. we delved into the fucking history of the people. No, actually, I guess it was mostly you guys. My apologies. Again, it's, all right. I'm sorry, it's been a while. So traditionally there was a good relationship between the consortium and the Empire of Numbers, largely because you know, you had to deal with the Covenate and other threats. But things have clearly fallen off. Oh, and the dwarves, of course. So the various dwarven societies of the Down Under. Keeping in mind that Sprongbrek is the most famous and perhaps most profitable because it was using all that shitty, sneaky demon magic.
Mm-hmm.
But that there are a number of dwarven conclaves throughout throughout Gren under hill, mountain, and ground. Things have clearly degraded there, which is interesting.
Yep.
There's also talk, because you rolled high, there's a push to like, we have to continue to innovate because we're starting to fall behind. Mm. You are aware that the Apex Institute, is a nation that is dedicated to scientific advancement and technology and is basically, for a long time, have been cutting edge developers and creators. What you're seeing between the lines of these trade publications is that there's a fear that Apex may be on the verge of becoming self-sufficient, which would be a huge blow to the consortium. who, again, as you've seen and as we've established, makes most of their profit moving other people's stuff around.
Yeah.
And if someone else were able, it's the classic Netflix versus HBO thing where Netflix was like, we need to become HBO before HBO realizes they could become Netflix. And it's that kind of moment of like, uh-oh. So that's what you get from the papers you've received. Does anything immediately jump out at Ita about that? Or is it just context knowledge for her further conspiracy unraveling?
I mean, I guess it's a little bit interesting. I find it strange that, you know, that the ties haven't kept up just because, at least in Ida's mind, working at the Apex Institute, it's like acquiring knowledge. Like, they always want to be acquiring knowledge. The consortium of Bleen, I mean, they move things between different societies. I don't quite, like, Ida wouldn't understand why they would want to sever any ties with them. Like, that seems like counterproductive to their ultimate goal of like of learning about everything. They'd want to keep all avenues open in her mind.
Fair enough. As you finish kind of your observations, Murdoch sort of appears in the walkway. In this is a really dumb but highly specific visual comparison I've got for these prison cells. I'm very much imagining the jail setup from Pirates of the Caribbean, like the first one, where it's just like a row of cells that are like incredibly well lit, and there's just kind of like a nice big guard space for like an individual guard. Of course, less like carved out of stone and more, you know, as we mentioned, brutalist architecture made of wood.
Yeah.
But there is kind of like a nice sense that you can go by. Murdoch appears kind of at the entrance, and she just quickly blows off the guard who kind of steps out. It's very much like okay, buddy. Just kind of blows past him. With her is a very, very elderly Tortle, who is wheeling herself along in just the most ornate wheelchair you've ever seen. Like, it's just embellished. It again looks like it's not from Bleen, and unlike someone like Murdoch or obviously Maka, this person seems to be very much of the Bleen that you've been observing. Like, we find the best version of the thing we can somewhere else, and that's the one I want. Like, we could make a wheelchair, but I don't want that one. I want a fancy one from somewhere else. And is bedecked in finery the way that only the truly old and truly wealthy can be, where it's just like chandelier earrings that are studded into the flesh of her face because turtles, heavy chain necklace, fancy fucking robes, looks a little bit like a mystic, like just in terms of like the fanciness, wearing full Sundara getup, but in that kind of my visual parallel for this is just Eartha Kitt as what's her name from
Yzma?
Yzma, thank you. But in a less cartoony way, but that same level of like, oh yeah, like I'm vaguely skeletal, but fuck you, I'm doing the full eyelash. I'm doing the full unlike the kind of clownish way that this manifests in a lot of the people you've seen wear Sundara since you've arrived, on her it kind of works. Like, she really knows what she's doing. Murdoch has Dennis kind of lead her down the hallway, and it's just gesturing broadly behind her. This woman like glowers at the guard, kind of wheels her way up to the bars. And Murdoch says, Ida, baby, listen, look, I hope those papers prove real useful for whatever you're trying to figure out. I really hope you sorted some stuff out, you found whatever you're looking for. But look, I know jail can be lonely, right? And like, you know, a few times I've been locked up, I've had Dennis, and that's been great. You know, he's a great listener because he can't talk. But I figured you might be going a little bit squirrely in here. And I know you had some big plans, but the good news is word of your little diplomatic incident spread pretty widely. That meant some people were rather curious to meet you. So I would very much like to introduce you to Ren Calmtree. She is one of the top merchant rulers, if I can use the term in our, with big air quotes, democracy here. One of the huge merchant lords. Of course, she's of an age now that, her daughters have taken over the business, but she's got a lot of wealth, a lot of influence. And when she learned that an ambassador from the Empire of Numbers was here, well, she just couldn't help herself, and honestly, neither could I. So I've brought you a companion. I thought it might be interesting for you to get some information, and I know she is very interested in talking to you. You okay with this? Am I good to leave this broad here? I got a date, so I'd really like to kind of,
It seems like you will do this anyway, so yes.
No, I mean, I can take her away, and the woman's like, no, she won't. So, okay, well, hypothetically, I could take her away, but I just thought she could have some valuable insight for you,
Then I will accept it greatly.
Great. Well, prisoners can't be choosers, am I right? Okay, great. I'll leave you two alone. Good luck. she sort of turns on her heel and walks out. Ren observes you from outside the bars for a moment, and then wheels slightly closer and says,
"So I understand that you are from the Empire of Numbers, yes?"
Yes, that is correct.
"Let me ask you something. What are you doing here? Your people learned a long time ago that we weren't worth talking to anymore."
"Well, I happen to disagree with that assessment. I believe that it is foolish to sever ties with the Consortium of Bleen. I'm here to discover what is going on and why that would happen."
"Well, looks like you and I got a lot to discuss then, don't we? Let me ask you something. What do you know about Apex?"
This episode of Curse Code and Crowd Sound was mixed and edited by Laura Hamstra, and the campaign was created by Tom McGee. Our original theme music was composed by Landon Noblock, and Curse Code and Crown's logo was created by the brilliant Decapitated Markers. If you want to follow our players or our DM on Twitter, you can reach out to Laura at EL Hamstring, Ryan at the Ryan LeBlanc, Tyler at Tyler_Hewitt, Tom McGee at McGeeTD, or you can message our whole company at DumDumDice. So please, join us again for more Curse, Code, and Crown!
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lorda Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Christian Mendez, Anna Zed, Eric Williams, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Great Dane, Acrix, Cameron Ezel, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.